Okay, I think it's 5 o'clock. Here we go. We just started the recording for all of you that can't be with us. Welcome, everyone. This is the Truly Food Ways to Nourish Your Family Toward Health, Balance, and Vitality teleseminar. Finally. We're really excited to be here with you tonight. And the way that we're going to bring that health, balance, and vitality is by teaching you how to better nourish and nurture your children with great food. I'm Andrea Nakayama.
And I'm Andrea Kaplan Livingston.
So some of you may know us, and a lot of you don't, and you've seen our names in print, and now you can hear the subtle differences in the way we pronounce our names. And as I said, I'm Andrea Nakayama, and I'm a nutritionist. And like with many of us, my road to nutrition began with a family health crisis. This was in April of 2000 when my husband, Isamu, was diagnosed with a very aggressive brain tumor. At the time of his diagnosis, I was just 7 weeks pregnant, so we were actually announcing to people that he had a brain tumor before we were announcing that we were pregnant. And the prognosis for his cancer was so grave that we looked for everything we could do to support his health and survival. And while he researched the latest medical trials, I explored all the supportive aspects of integrative treatment like acupuncture, massage and cranial work, and of course, nutrition. Meanwhile, I also needed to support my own body and the life growing inside of me to the best of my abilities, and food promised to be a really powerful venue. It gave me something that I could do every day, several times a day, to nurture my growing family, and food became my friend. It empowered me to be making a difference, and so I'm really eager to share the empowering aspects of food with all of you, even though your own family's health situation may not be as grave as that. As we'll talk about through the call, there are lots of ways to nourish your family with food. My husband, Isamu, outlived his prognosis. He died almost 2.5 years later when our son Gilbert was 19 months old. They actually didn't expect him to live to see Isamu born, so that was quite a feat. And Gilbert is 9 now, and he's thriving. And I'll admit that I'm always tweaking his diet to meet his growing needs. Like with all parenting, it's a work in progress. And as a nutritionist working with families, I work from the core to engage the natural resources of the digestive system as a pathway to heal all body systems, eradicate deficiencies, and open the channels to invite nourishment and healing. And I'm hoping to share some of that with you tonight. Andrea, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So I'm the Andrea of Andrea and Andrea. And my path to using food for health actually began in the early 90s. I was studying sustainable agriculture in college, and with my studies, I traveled down to Central America. And while I was there, I was living on different farms and eating tons of fresh produce, which sounds really healthy, which I thought it was, and I'm sure it was. But when I got home, I fell into a state where I was sleepy all day, foggy-headed, headaches, and I really did not want to get out of bed, and I was doing a postgraduate program and having a really hard time. So I had some blood tests done, and I ended up testing positive for systemic candida, which can present symptoms sort of like chronic fatigue. And I, at the time, there really wasn't a lot of information about food and how you can cure that with food. And so I did a lot of research and started treating it with a number of dietary changes, and one being taking sugar out of the diet. And that was kind of my introduction to exploring alternatives for sugar. What does it mean to have sugar in your diet? And it took about a year, year and a half, and it went away, and along with some other therapies. So if you can skip ahead 10 years, my son Isaac was born. And when he was born, in the first few months, I noticed a lot of eczema on his body, and he was colicky. And I knew that something was not right. And I was seeing a naturopath up in Seattle, and she encouraged me to start messing with my diet because he was exclusively nursing then. And so I did. I started, you know, adding some things, taking some things out, and his eczema cleared up and his colic went away. So that was kind of eye-opening for me. And ever since then, I do pay attention to what he eats, and I keep an eye on his eczema because it will flare up. And I've used food a lot to help treat him for that. So that's kind of my story.
Thanks, Andrea. For those of you who are just joining us, we just did our introductions, and you're all on mute. So, you know, I think, like I said in the frequently asked question page, you can make as much noise around you as you need to. We're the only ones that aren't muted. And we are two moms who are in a constant dialogue with real food, both professionally and personally, for healthy children. We'll share some of our most effective secrets with you tonight so that you don't have to live your lives at the level of exploration, and those who know us might actually call it obsessive probing, that we do ours. We've actually done a lot of the legwork for you. This class is for all parents, and these tips will help all children. I have not found one kid that would not benefit from becoming at least one of the following: more focused, less combative, more relaxed, more expansive in their food choices, and less reactive. All children need ample inner resources to cope with the childhood challenges or even traumas that they are presented with on a regular basis. And their challenges every day may not seem traumatic to us, but they are traumatic for them. They're living in a life where they're exposed to new things all the time, and they're having to process that. Food is their number one external resource to enliven those internal resources. And what and when our kids eat does make a difference. It's their primary fuel, and it's a real thing. Just like cars don't function on vinegar, kids don't function, or at least not very well, on soda. And in my nutrition practice, I see a wide range of kids that suffer in some way or another from the modern childhood epidemics of allergies, eczema, asthma, and the scope of sensory processing issues. And I also see more and more children struggling with anxiety, sleep disorders, and even depression.
So I have a thing that happens that I get a lot is questions from parents like, is this who my child is constitutionally, or is this a behavior that is something that is an effect of food? So I don't know if you see that. I'm sure you see that a lot in your practice.
I do, and it's a good question, and a lot of people ask that. And I also hear of somebody who may be seeing me who has a friend who has a child with a similar situation to their own child, and they'll say that friend maybe says, well, this is just who my child is. I think it's just time for us to accept that. And it's true. We do need to accept who our children are, but there are ways to enliven their inner resources. So it's not that by changing their diet, we're actually changing who they are. If you have a willful or dramatic child, they're still going to be willful and dramatic, but they're going to be those things in the best way possible instead of being inflamed to be that way at a magnitude that may be disruptive for their life and in your family life, in your home life, or in their home life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not that you're changing your child. You're just giving them more inner resources to cope with life. And I wanted to tell one story about a little girl that I worked with. But before I do that, I just wanted to give you a little tour of the page that you're on in case you're in front of your computer, because Andrea just asked a really good question, and then I wanted to tell you how you could ask questions. So if you're in front of your computer, there's a little question box there, and you can type a question into that question box at any time. And we'll be monitoring those during the call, hopefully addressing some as we go, and we'll aim to have some Q&A time at the end of the call, depending on how things proceed. But in case we don't get to Q&A time, we'll also send you a follow-up email with a consolidated list of answers to the questions that came up throughout the call tonight. So do feel free to write your questions there, whether we answer them tonight on the call or not. We are going to get to them, and you'll get an email in the next few days that answers them. So I wanted to tell a story about a little girl I worked with named Fiona, and Fiona is actually a strong and willful enough child that she asked me to use her real name when I asked her. And I started working with Fiona when she was 8 years old, and she'd been hospitalized for the severity of her eczema. Her body was covered with it. She was in pain and was incredibly uncomfortable, and she'd wake her whole family up in the middle of the night with her cries of discomfort. So Fiona wasn't the only one in her family suffering. They were all suffering. Her parents were really worried. They were distressed about her health and her comfort level. And this happens a lot when somebody in the family is suffering, whether it's minor or major, the whole family suffers and they all need support. And this is another way nutrition can be support for the whole family. And in the hospital, the allergists had wrapped Fiona in bandages to try to quiet the pain and inflammation. And unfortunately, none of them explored food allergies or considered that what she put into her body, as well as what she didn't put into her body, might have an impact on her condition. When I started working with Fiona, her parents were eager, you might actually say desperate, to bring her relief. And what parent wouldn't be, right? I think we'd all be in that same situation. And I'm not sure there's anything worse than seeing our child struggling. So this is where we all need some relief. We started an aggressive plan for Fiona, and we removed some major food categories from her diet. We implemented some rules for what to eat when, and we brought in some key nutrients through both food and targeted supplementation. Within less than 4 months, I think it might have actually been closer to 3, Fiona's skin was clear. She had lost some weight, and even though she didn't look like she needed to lose weight before the dietary protocol, she was actually lean and healthy and strong and vibrant looking. But the most amazing thing to me was that her performance in school improved, and she was more grounded and less imperious with her siblings and her classmates. And this was amazing because Fiona was one of the first kids that I worked with in this way. And really, there was a pretty radical transformation for her. And I see this a lot. I put one person in the family on a dietary change, and when the whole family follows, the whole family experiences change. So even the people who aren't inflicted with the imbalance that somebody is seeking help for, everybody's health improves. And while your own child may or may not experience something as extreme as Fiona, believe me when I say that all children benefit from dietary changes. Again, this class is for you if you're compelled to introduce nutritious foods that your kids will love, incorporate foods that will allow your child to get through the day with more equanimity, remove the anti-nutrient food that is making your kids sick and tired, eliminate erratic mood swings, behaviors, and chronic health problems, foster focused, energetic, happy, and balanced kids, or merely want to feel empowered to give your child the best of what you can give them in ways you didn't even realize. Are you ready to get to the meat of it, Andrea?
I am.
Okay, here we go, guys. We're getting into the teaching points. As promised, we're going to talk about the following key points. The number one meal to boost your child's mental acuity and emotional balance. The number one food category to feed your child's developing bones and brains. And the number one substance that inflames bad moods, bowel challenges, asthma, allergies, and eczema, and all those behavioral struggles we've been mentioning. I said brains, like your child has more than one, but we'll think of them as all the children's brains. What this means for you is that you'll leave this call tonight with real guidance for how to start making a difference in your child's world tomorrow. It's our commitment to give you usable, real food tools for change in the time we have together tonight. And these will be effective and easy to implement strategies for actual health breakthroughs. We'll also let you know how you can tap into a broader wealth of information, guidance, and resources for making the more supported and deeper level transformation that your child may need to fully thrive. So some of you may wonder if food is actually an issue that affects your child, and just, you know, consider that these things can be remedied with food. If your child's wheezing or snoring at night, keeping themselves up or keeping you up in any way. If your child's straining to go to the bathroom, I can't believe how many kids don't poop once a day. It's alarming to me, at least once a day, I should say. Do you find that, Andrea?
Yeah, and I think people think it's normal.
What were you going to say?
I think people think that it's normal that they don't do that.
I know, and I think that there are, I even hear that there are some doctors who are telling parents it's okay if their children don't poop once a day, and that's toxic. The kids need to be pooping at least once a day. I talk a lot about poop, and this drives the kids crazy. It drives my son crazy. If you're getting any kind of report home from school about your child disrupting the class, either with not being able to pay attention or being spacey, this is my child, or having any kind of anger issues. If going to a restaurant is a potentially embarrassing endeavor for you, or do you just find yourself curious about the foods in your pantry and fridge and sometimes feel a little guilty for making certain offerings, or wonder when your partner makes certain offerings or a grandparent makes certain offerings and, you know, how to navigate that and why you're feeling a little bit reserved about what's happening when other people are making offerings to your child? Some of you may already suspect that your child has issues with food or actually been told that your child would benefit from a dietary change from a doctor or another healthcare practitioner, from a friend or family member, or you might just suspect it yourself, wonder if this actually makes a difference. I have people who come to me and say, like, we see that every time our child eats sugar, she's totally bouncing off the walls, and we think something is going on. Could it be that direct? So you may already know, and you may have actually already experimented with changing your child's diet, but didn't seem like it worked, or they complained about the food, or the entire notion of change was completely daunting.
Yeah, you know, I get that a lot with parents who know they want to make a change, and they're all busy, and the main thing is kind of, what do I feed my child, and how do I do this? How do I make this shift? And how can I do it in a way that doesn't take a ton of mental energy? Because you know and I know that we just don't have the reserves. So that's kind of what my wish is that you guys will get out of this, is that we can give you some ways that are easy and really doable. So
yeah, and we both hear this all the time. What should I eat? What should my children eat? Is this okay to eat? Would you send them to school with this? How do I do what you're doing? How do I make that? Will the rest of my family comply? My husband doesn't like the fudge. So, you know, where do we begin? Where do we begin all this? And we begin with the number one meal to boost your child's mental acuity. And who doesn't want that? I think we know what that meal is. Do you think everybody knows what that meal is?
I hope you all know.
Yeah, breakfast. So it's breakfast, but let's talk about why is breakfast so important. I think we've been pretty inundated by now with this idea that breakfast is a really, really important. So especially with the older kids, they may wake up and say they don't feel hungry. And this may be true of you too. I hear lots of people say, I'm just not hungry in the morning. And even if you don't feel hungry, don't think that your body and brains are not starving. It's called break fast for a reason, and the last time your kids ate may have been 8 to 12 hours before their morning meal. So that fast is necessary for proper digestion and to give the body a rest from processing. It's actually good to stop eating early in the evening so that we do have that time to digest before we lay down and go to sleep. Yet breaking that fast is equally as important. And the drop in blood sugar that occurs with the fast from eating, and that means no food to raise the blood sugar up, leads to mood swings, exhaustion, and cravings. And those cravings that, you know, is what's happening a lot of times with a craving is that your body's looking for equilibrium. It's looking for a state of normalcy. And when the blood sugar drops too low, we grab for the things that are going to make the blood sugar go up. And blood sugar goes up with sugar or carbohydrates. So in looking for equilibrium, we start to have cravings that lead to the consumption of sweeter foods and carbohydrates. And this happens no matter what age we are. So if we don't have a good breakfast, we're going to tend to eat more carbohydrates, sweeter type foods. And there are a lot of studies now. One big thing that's seen in teenagers that don't eat breakfast and experience these physiological challenges, something that's called packing on the pounds. So the younger your child is, the better off you are for establishing the patterns of body regulation. You can teach them now to regulate their body by having breakfast all the time, setting that pattern for them. So here's the big question, what's for breakfast? It's critical to make sure that your kids start the day with protein. Too often I hear parents talk about serving their kids organic Oreos and organic 2% milk or rice milk and wonder why their child is slumping in their seat by 10 a.m. So those foods don't have any protein in them or have very little protein in them. And proteins are what enable the growth and repair that your child's body and brain need. This is their most restorative and building macronutrient. Those carbohydrates and sugars in the cold cereals and processed milks, and I'm saying processed milks even when you're being careful to buy products with no added sugars, whether your cereal or your milk has sugar added or not, because they're processed, they have more sugar, those lead to crash and burn for all body systems. And when I say all body systems, I mean the nervous system, the brain, the immune system, the muscular system, and the endocrine system, which is their hormones. So the systems are all affected by that that blood sugar crash. And the way I explain this to the kids is in terms of a fast train and a slow train. So this is how this image looks, and it's really easy for you to explain to your kids too. If you put a train on the tracks, a fast train on the track, it's going to go speeding along the track, and it's never going to get to its destination. It's going to completely derail and just turn over sideways, and that's your fast train. If you put a slow train on the tracks, it's going to get to its destination. Slow and steady wins the race. And if you put a fast train behind a slow train, that fast train can't go any faster than the slow train that's in front of it. So when it comes to food and blood sugar, we don't have to talk to the kids about blood sugar. We just talk about them sustaining their energy like the slow train so that they can get to their destination. And the slow train is fat, fiber, and protein. And when I was reading over this class just a couple days ago, my son heard this part, and he said that one of his classmates, whose mom knows this trick, puts a little note in his box that says, chugga chugga choo choo, so that when he opens his lunch basket every day, he can see this little note, and it reminds him to look for the slow train foods. What's the fat, fiber, and protein? What do I eat before my apple or my raisins or whatever it is? So that way they know that they can monitor it as well.
I'm going to use that trick. I like that.
It really works. We started I think last year in second grade, but a lot of parents started using it for their younger kids too, and it totally works. Then for the older kids, I talk to them about it in terms of their performance. So instead of talking about trains, I talk about what's going to enable them to win that track meet, play a wicked game of chess, design that computer program, compete to the best of their abilities in that dance competition. My niece is a professional dancer at age 11, so she's got to be functioning all the time. She dances for hours every day. Or just look and feel their best all the time because they're coming into a time where they're more conscious about who they are in the world, and speaking to them about how they can look and feel their best really meets their needs. So the cereal, though better than nothing, isn't the key, and protein is. And how do we get protein into breakfast? So Andrea is going to give you some ideas that are really helpful, but I just wanted to tell you that we set up an e-handout for you, so you don't have to be scribbling these down frantically right now. We set up an e-handout that might actually be in your inbox now, and it has more extensive ideas than we're going to list here. So don't worry. They're all there for you, and you can have them later. But Andrea, you want to share some of your ideas with us?
Sure. I actually just checked my inbox, and it is there, and it's called What's for Breakfast, so you guys will get that. And basically what I'm saying is also on the handout in addition to some other things. But I'll list off some ideas for breakfast, whole milk, coconut milk, or yogurt smoothies, and you can add nut butters, things with fat in them, coconut butter if you are familiar with that. Muesli or granola with whole milk, coconut milk, or yogurt, and adding chopped fruit, dried fruit like figs, apples, nuts, seeds. Pasture-raised eggs, prepared in any fashion. Sometimes I will soft-boil them. That's how my son likes them, for about 7 minutes. Or you can do a very lightly fried egg in coconut oil, ghee, or butter. And if you eat meat, you can serve it with a nitrate-free meat or a sprouted grain bread or tortilla. Fresh apples or pears sliced with some nut butter. Serve it on or with some whole grain sprouted bread. Buckwheat pancakes with whole milk yogurt. And when I say yogurt, it can be cow's milk yogurt or goat's milk yogurt. We use goat milk in our house. And some fresh fruit. And then another idea, if you do make whole grains, you can use leftover whole grains like rice, millet, or quinoa. And you can make a morning cereal out of it by adding butter and a milk or yogurt of choice. And again, some nuts, fruit, and maybe some raw honey. So those are just some quick ideas. And like we said, they are listed on your handout that just went up to your email.
Those are great ideas. And you may already do some of those, or you may actually be thinking, my kids are never going to eat that. Or I don't even know what some of those things are. What's ghee? What's quinoa? These things may be foreign to you. So don't worry. The important thing to know is that you need to start where you are. If you need to continue with the Oatios and just switch to whole milk or yogurt, which we'll talk about later, and slowly start to add some chopped nuts and seeds, that's a great start. And you can even mix the chopped seeds or nuts with some coconut, palm, or date sugar. Those are low glycemic sugars. And put some cinnamon in there and let the kids be empowered to start adding some protein to their food. So even though you're adding a little bit of that low glycemic sweetener to kind of fool them, or what's a better word? We don't want to fool them. We want to encourage them to be adding some protein to their breakfast meal. That's a good way to do it. And I actually made, at my son's school, there was a harvest offering, and I put on the table a mason jar filled with chopped walnuts and coconut sugar and cinnamon, and the kids were fighting over it because they all had tasted it and wanted some of it. So it's a really simple way to get things in. I even use that mixture of coconut sugar and chopped nuts to put on toast for cinnamon toast, but getting a little more protein in there. So you can make a cinnamon toast with a sprouted grain bread or even a gluten-free bread that has a little more protein and get some added protein in there. So the important thing here is to start where you are. And the other important thing to note is that palates do change. And Andrea and I were discussing this earlier, and I see this happen all the time where a parent serves their child something once and then thinks that they don't like it because they only ate it once and said they didn't like it. And with children, you have to offer things constantly. It sometimes takes like 10 times for the child to actually become accustomed to that new food. And when you take certain foods out and put new ones in, they'll think they don't like it just because it's new. They've never had it on their tongue, and then they start to adjust to it. And, Andrea, you had that great story with broccoli with Isaac.
Yeah, my son, he was very definite. I do not eat broccoli. He is not a person that eats broccoli, he would tell me. And I just said, okay. And I decided that every night for about 10 days, I was just going to put it on the table in front of him, one big bowl that we could all eat out of. And my husband and I would eat it, and he would watch us in his way of saying, I do not eat broccoli. And then by the 10th day, he ate broccoli, and he eats broccoli, and it is one of the vegetables that I can really count on him eating now. It's like, without a doubt, I know that if I serve it, he will eat it. So that it works. It really does work.
Yeah, just keep putting it on the table. Keep putting it out there. Eat it yourself. They see you doing it. They're going to do it too. So your action step from this teaching point number one is add protein at breakfast and look over that e-handout and start to get some ideas from there. And if you have any other ideas and you want to let us know, that's great too. Just add the protein in for breakfast. So we're going to move on from breakfast and protein to what's the number one food category to feed your child's bones and brain. This is a controversial one. You want to tell them, Andrea?
Fat.
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 Fat. It's fat. And before we talk about dietary fat, let me regale you with just a few simple facts about the brain. And I'm totally a brain person. You know, that may have started with my husband's diagnosis with a brain tumor, but I work a lot now with people with mood and behavioral issues and issues that are neurological. And so I'm fascinated by how food actually affects the functioning of the brain. And when I teach classes, I bring in a lot of brain facts. So here are some for you. The brain is 60% fat. It's actually the fattest part of your body. The gut and the brain are directly connected to each other via a really large nerve called the vagus nerve. And the hippocampus, which is a part of the brain nestled in the temporal lobes, right on the side of your brain there, on the side of your head, that is directly connected to the immune system, our body's ability to fight infection and disease, and a lot of the immune system is right there in the gut. So why am I talking so much about the brain? I think most of us would say that we want our child's brains to function optimally. The brain is key to their ability to perform well on their exams, to understand and process the world around them, to relate to other individuals, and to feel content and at peace, happy, and balanced. Our brain is critical to sleep, to eat, and to function. And the brain is a really vulnerable organ, and it's affected instantaneously by nutritional deficits and imbalances. It needs to be fed. So how does a diet devoid of proper nutrients affect brain function? If nutrients are not available to nourish the brain cells, the transmission of impulses is faulty. If the nutrients are not available, electrical impulses are not properly produced. And if the nutrients are not available, neurotransmitters are not produced. And your neurotransmitters are your serotonin and your dopamine, all those things that we need to feel balanced and happy. The brain needs nutrients, and I'm going to repeat this one fact again. The brain is made of 60% fat. The brain actually uses dietary fat for cell membrane integrity, cell permeability, and building the brain at a structural level. So I talk a lot to elderly individuals about using fat to nourish their brain. Brain cells can actually be, they don't necessarily die off. You can actually regenerate brain cells, and fat is one of the ways you do that. And why not start the kids early with nourishing their brains? So we're not talking about bad fats. And what this means for us as parents is that by feeding our children low-fat diets, we are starving their brains of critical building blocks. So we want to get out of this thinking about low fats, but we don't want to move into this thinking of bad fats. And there are plenty of bad fats. And we're not talking here about adding trans fats or fried foods or oxidized fats or any kind of processed fats. Fat is a big and gloppy topic, so we're going to skip the confusion of the don'ts and focus on the do's for a moment. Andrea, do you want to share your fat do's?
My fat do's?
Fat do's.
Like which fats to include? So the good fats I include and I would recommend to others would be coconut oil, organic butter from grass-fed cows, if possible, ghee, which is a clarified butter, olive oil, unrefined sesame oil, lard if you eat it, and then flax oil and hemp seed oil, both of which are not for cooking. You would not heat flax or hemp seed. You would use them in smoothies, salad dressings, or on any stir fries. You would kind of drizzle it on top. So also nuts and seeds and fats from good quality eggs and meats. And also full-fat dairy if you use animal protein in your diet.
For some of you, this list may be difficult to digest. I also use those same diets. We don't do the animal fats as much, so that's not included. But those are the ones I recommend to my clients, that same list that Andrea said. And this may be hard to hear. You may be thinking, like, this is crazy, and you may want to hang up the phone, but stick with us. Take a deep breath. We're going to tell you how you can learn more, but first we want to tell you where to add the fat. And I want to just encourage you that we do a lot of research, and the trend is changing with good fat and bad fat and what fat is okay to eat. It's slow, but it is changing. There are more books written by doctors. There are more doctors talking about this. In fact, I had a doctor come to a class I teach called Fat Versus Fiction, which I'll also mention later, but she came, and I have a lot of naturopaths and doctors and other health professionals come to my class, but she actually works with bariatric patients, patients who are overweight. And she came to my class and said, I'm studying more and more about working with bariatric patients, and I'm learning that everything I learned in medical school about fat was wrong. So I'm here to hear what Andrea has to say about fat. And she and I talk all the time now, and she's totally on board with this notion that fat is not a bad thing. So let's talk about where to add the fat. My rule is to add it anywhere and everywhere. So number one, ditch the low-fat stuff. It's loaded with added sugar. So remember the slow train? We had the fat, fiber, and protein. When you remove the fat from a food, you actually increase its sugar and therefore increase the speed of the train. Also, when you remove the fat from something, it's no longer a whole food. It's a processed food. There's been processing involved to remove the fat. Number two is mix it into anything and everything. I put coconut oil or ghee or organic butter into oatmeal or rice or any hot grain. You could just stir it right in there. You could put spoonfuls of coconut oil and squirts of flax oil in their morning smoothies. And you can make treats that are sure to include both protein and good fats, like the ones that you received from us when signing up for the class. So the superfoods that were in those recipes that we sent you that Andrea created were many, but one of the superfoods was fat. So all of those desserts are slow trains. Andrea, do you have any places that you like to just sneak in the fat?
You pretty much touched them all. I'm thinking in, smoothies, like adding nut butter, coconut butter, full-fat yogurt, into any time my son or my family eats any whole grains, I add a fat into that, usually ghee. It's always on my mind. It's like no matter what.
Add the fat.
Yes.
It's also important to remember that the fat-soluble vitamins, and those are vitamin A, D, E, and K, and we hear a lot about D right now, and those are critical for bone growth and strength. And those fat-soluble vitamins are found in most good quality butter, egg yolks, grass-fed beef, and cod liver oil where the fats have been retained. So that's special cod liver oil. We're actually getting it for the fat-soluble vitamins. So again, when you take the fat out of the food, you lose those fat-soluble vitamins. And those are vitamins that our bodies need, especially the children. The children's bodies, their bones, their brains really need the fat. The other thing about fat is I talked about the fat-soluble vitamins, and I want to mention the essential fats. And the essential fatty acids are the omega-3s and some of the omega-6s that we need that we find in fish and flax and hemp, and those are essential for the brain to function. They reduce inflammation and they allow the body to thrive. So we have our fat-soluble vitamins and we have our essential fatty acids, the omega-3s and certain omega-6s. And those are called essential because we don't make them in our body. We actually have to get them from food. If we don't get them from food, we don't have them. So sometimes depression all on its own is an omega-3 deficiency. So our children need those to really be thriving. The omega-3s and certain omega-6s also help with a lot of the inflammation. So it really helps with the eczema and the allergies and quieting down some of the inflammatory factors in the body. And I was in the waiting room to see my chiropractor this week. It's actually the first time I've ever been to a chiropractor, but I was in a car accident on Monday. So I picked up a Glamour magazine while I was waiting for him to come out and get me. And inside that, I found an article about fat. And it said, if the label says low, light, L-I-T-E, or free, women tend to grab it off the grocery store shelves. But the real thing is often a better bet. So this was in a glamour magazine. So, you know, it's really coming into the fore now. And Andrea and I are at the pulse of, we are studying these things at the pulse. So we're often seeing these changes and these shifts in dietary thinking before it's mainstream. And so that's why we have to teach it, so that we can educate all of you before you may hear it or it might become common knowledge. And Andrea, you were saying earlier that your parents have made this shift from eating low fat.
Yeah, it was really hard for them. It was like, I used to go into their refrigerator and you open it up and everything was low fat, light. You know, it's kind of like an old school way of thinking. And my dad especially just could not wrap his brain around the fact that that is not healthy. And it took a while, and he eventually made the shift and they made the shift, and they're actually so much more happy. I mean, just eating normal food. And it tastes better. It's better for you. And it just took him a little while to kind of make the shift. But he's much, much happier eating the way that, you know, he should be. So.
And when you think about it, the word light, L-I-T-E, isn't even a word. Like, it's not, it can't be associated with a whole food because it's a manufactured word, just like the food is more manufactured or processed. So we want to assure you that your kids are not going to get fat from eating fat. More and more research is showing that fat is not the culprit in diabetes, obesity, and heart disease. The culprit for those is our third teaching point tonight, and we'll get to that in a little bit. And we know you still very well may be sitting there dismayed, perplexed, or possibly aghast. Feed my kid extra fat? And I know, like I said, I teach an entire two-hour class called Fat Versus Fiction that breaks apart the myths around fat and separates our understanding of the good from the bad and the history of the mystery and the controversy around the macronutrient fat. It's a lot, and we go into a lot of details in that class, and people come in not knowing what to think or being really confused about what fats to eat, and we talk about the differences in fat. So there's a lot to learn there. And like I said, we can bring our years of research and experience to your ears, and you can let us do that legwork for you. So we're tracking the newest dietary explorations and findings, often before they make it to the cognition of many doctors. Food and nutrition is our specialty, and it's what we're passionate about. We read, we follow, we track, we go to conferences, and we study, and we talk endlessly about this stuff. And this is one of the things I just love about working with you, Andrea, is that dialogue that we could have, that sense of community and support around everything that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm, you know, through our online forums for our other classes, it's been wonderful to see how other people can do that too and how much they feel supported. So.
And we're constantly making shifts in our own diets and seeing, does this work, doesn't this work, and exploring it together. So, you know, we're on it in that way. And our mission is to extract nuggets from the bounty of information, which is sometimes conflicting information, just like this fat issue, and to contextualize it with what we already know and distill it for you so you can better support your children and your entire family. And there's a lot of conflicting information out there, and I see this with a lot of junior nutritionists who are just starting to study and who are exposed to so many different ways of thinking. And when they're not as established, it's like being a ping pong ball, and that's because they're in the realm of it. But it's true for everybody. We get different articles, different magazine articles, different newspaper findings. NPR says one thing, and it just buffets us all over the place so that we can't figure out what's going on. And that's where, you know, we have that context to be able to go, well, that study only took into account X, Y, and Z. It forgot to look at this and this and this. So this is what's important for you from this. Remember that by adding protein and fat into your kid's diet tomorrow, you're going to see some beneficial shifts and changes. These foods ground them. They energize them, they support growth and repair, and they're building and nourishing. And you'll notice again that we're only speaking about whole food sources of protein and fat. So your action step from this teaching point number two to nourish your kids' bones and brain is to add the fat and add it in wherever you can think to add it in. So we've been speaking a lot about all this research we do and how we put together all this information, and that's because we're working more and more on developing things for you. And we put together this really excellent plan for you on how you can learn more and receive the support you need to make the critical dietary changes that your children need to thrive. And we've designed an entire program called Your Vibrant Child. And this program is your ticket to nourish your family toward optimal health with Truly Food Nutrition. And Your Vibrant Child is an 18-week course with 9 classes, and each of those classes focuses on a different subject to support your child's right and ability to transform. Children who are acting out, acting up, retreating, or whose bodies are in some way doing the same with skin, breathing, allergies, bowel problems, are just plain uncomfortable. They're actually screaming for help, and this plan that we've put together is a step-by-step system to offer them the best soothing comfort that you can. The teaching points in the extended course will allow you to see your child grounded and more balanced and able to handle life's childhood challenges, more focused and intentional, making clearer choices for themselves, less symptomatic with better sleep, digestion, and elimination, and less congested, breathing and skin irritations finally abated. You may actually be surprised that what you thought was a constitutional characteristic of your child was actually a whole lot of physiological agitation with behavioral manifestations. So that goes back to what Andrea was asking earlier about that constitutional question, is this constitution or is it not? There could be a lot of agitation in their bodies that's causing them to act or react in a certain way. In those 9 classes, we'll explore health issues related to the consumption of sugar, gluten, dairy, carbohydrates, and oxidized fats. And we'll look at missing nutrients such as proteins, essential fats, fat-soluble vitamins, phytonutrients, which are your plant foods, and your cultured foods. And we'll explore cooking and food preparation methods to optimize the nutrition in every bite your child takes, including live food preparations, cultured food preparation, and slow food preparation. And Andrea is amazing at being able to teach all of us how to incorporate these food practices, these techniques for making food into our kitchen. Do you have anything you want to say about that?
Not really, thanks. I've done a lot of it, and I've done it in a way that I don't spend a ton of time making food. So what the recipes I have and the things that I'm going to provide are really going to be something that is very doable, very easy, quick, and really nutritious. So, yeah.
I feel like I'm not conveying how excited I am about this program because it's taken us all this time to put it together and to think about what it's going to be and what kind of steps we're going to take you through. And it's so cool. It's really amazing. And you'll have all the support and community that you need to understand why and how to make the changes at home and in the world. And like I said, the course we put together is 18 weeks. It starts in just 2 weeks on June 27th and takes you through to mid-October, starting in the summer when all schedules are changing and bringing you through transition back to school. The classes will be teleseminars, just like this one, but there will be lots of added benefits. So I'm going to go over just what we have outlined in that course because that brings you more of what we have to offer you in a more extended and supported way. So what the course includes is 4.5 months of information and support, 9 live online classes held every other Sunday night, which, as you know from the fact for this call, you can tune into at any other time other than the time the class is happening. There will, however, always be a live Q&A time following each class, so you can interact directly with us on the phone. There will be a bounty of Andrea's kid-friendly recipes, lots of handouts from both of us to help you navigate the terrain of making dietary changes and making them out there in the world, resources to learn and explore more outside of class, and then, like Andrea was saying, that online message board forum with regular access to both of us. So the online message board is something we've found really effective. People can log on at any time they're having a question or a problem or a struggle. We, between the two of us, log on as much as we can to answer those questions. But there's also a sense of community that develops, so you're not isolated making the kind of changes that your family needs. So that's the really amazing thing about the message forum, is you start to create community. And again, class begins on June 27th. And we really wanted to make this accessible to as many of you as possible so that you can make critical changes for your children's health. So we're offering the course at a totally affordable rate, and it's much more cost-effective than working with me privately, and my private practice is bursting at the seams. So we were trying to figure out what it would actually cost to work with each of us on a monthly basis, or us together on a monthly basis. And, you know, it would be, I think, in excess of $700 or something to have both of our services per month. And what we've done for this program, the Your Vibrant Child course, is made it really easy so that you could do it in four installments of $133 a month. And we also have discounted offerings for a reduced number of payments. So if you want to get a bigger discount, you can pay every other month, June and August, for $257, or you can pay in full for a one-time payment of $497. So the price goes down as you reduce your number of payments. The fewer payments, the less it costs to you. But we do want to stress this is not an investment in us or our class. It's really an investment in your family's health. And for the first 20 of you, we wanted to give an incentive that the first 20 people that become part of the Your Vibrant Child community of parents will add an extra added bonus savings of $25, which will be reimbursed after your final class payment. And we're really excited, like I said, about bringing these teachings and results to you. We know that they can change your life, and your home will be less chaotic and more balanced after this kind of nutritional makeover.
And it's it's not just a makeover for your child. I mean, you're going to be at it doing this for yourself too. I just know everything that I implement for my son, I do it for myself. So it's just a lot of information that you can use across the board for your whole family.
Absolutely. And I've seen that time and time again. I mean, I'll have a child that I have to take off of certain foods, and there may be a skeptical parent, and that parent makes the changes, and they can't believe how good they feel. They lose weight, they're more energetic, they're more productive. So they feel those things and know their child does too. And I wanted to share another story. I shared Fiona's story, and I wanted to share a story about a little boy named Ryan that I work with. And Ryan was diagnosed with Tourette's this year. And I watched him ticking fairly often, especially when he was in a situation that made him anxious or nervous. And I approached the parents, because I work a lot with brain and neurological issues with diet, and said, let's tackle this with nutrition. And to be honest, at that point, I had never worked with anybody with Tourette's and tics, and now I seem to have a good handful of children that are either diagnosed with Tourette's or have tics. And we changed Ryan's diet pretty aggressively, like with Fiona, because this is something that the parents wanted to shift quickly. So it wasn't as slow and steady. It was a little bit more of a we're diving right in. And we started working in November, I believe, and I just went to Ryan's school play, and I was amazed, just touched and amazed to see him acting and performing, but so confident. He was playing the ukulele on stage, and he was jumping around and turning in circles, and he was so vibrant and happy and comfortable. And his mom turned to me and joked, and she said, like, should we put some of those things back in his diet, because he was being such a ham and he was so comfortable. And I said, I didn't even see him tick once. And I think she said she thought the same thing, and she went to whisper to her mom that she didn't see anything. And when she said that, she saw the tiniest one that no one would ever notice. And this was a kid whose tics were so extreme that the kids in the class were noticing. They were starting to say things about it. There was a parent meeting to talk to all the parents about talking to their kids. And now, in a performance that would otherwise cause a lot of anxiety for him, that anxiety would lead to the tics, he was performing incredibly well. So this child, Ryan, deserves to thrive, and he is. And his parents made the commitment to address the problem at its core imbalances, and to return, the return for that is actually priceless. Ryan's confidence and his parents' beaming faces are the kind of thing that keep me doing the work that I do. And one of the key things that Fiona and Ryan's parents removed from their diet is the same thing that has the potential to make our kids fat and at further risk for disease, and is also our third teaching point. So the number one substance that inflames bad moods, bowel challenges, asthma, allergies, eczema, and behavioral struggles, that's the anti-nutrient, you want to say it, Andrea?
Sugar.
So, yeah, sugar. Like I said, I like to call it an anti-nutrient. And when I teach it to the older kids, we might talk about what are macronutrients, what are micronutrients, what are phytonutrients, and what is an anti-nutrient. Sugar is an anti-nutrient. So we are 55 minutes into our call, and I'd love, as we're talking about sugar, if you're mobile, if you have a headset on, if you're near your kitchen, if you could walk into your kitchen now and get a box off of your pantry shelf or something out of the refrigerator that is a packaged food, either a yogurt or a drink. If you're not mobile, maybe this is a good time to get up and stretch while everybody's going to grab something. And then we're going to talk about how to read labels. And you may think you already know how to read a label, but we're going to take you through it in a little bit more of an extended way. I'm going to hop on over to the Q&A and just see how we're doing over there. There's a question about the transcript. Will there be some place we can replay this webcast? Yes, if you are signed up on this mailing list, on this particular mailing list, which you are to begin this call, you will get a recording tomorrow. So we will have the recording. It's being recorded right now, and you will definitely get a recording. So will all the people who are listening at different times. So, yes, there won't be a transcript, but there will be a recording for you to listen to. Okay, I'm going to assume that we all are back with our foods. What I'd like everybody to do is find the nutritional facts little box on their packaged food. Andrea and I each have one in front of us, too. When you find that box, go to the area that says total carb, and under that you'll find a listing that says sugars, and it'll say something grams. So take that number, that sugars number, that something grams, and divide that by 4. That number of grams that you saw is the number of grams of sugars in one serving. So we're going to divide that number of grams per serving by 4. And it should be math that's not too hard for you to do. And you can round up. Andrea, do you want to say what you have in front of you and how many grams of sugars? Oh, yep. Let me just first explain that when you're thinking of that number that we divided by 4, imagine like sugar packets that you would get from the cafe and line up in front of you visually how many sugar packets you actually just, that number that you just divided to get. So whether it's 2 or 4 or 5, imagine that many sugar packets sitting in front of you. That's the amount of sugars that are in one serving of the product that you're looking at. So Andrea, sorry to interrupt.
It's okay. I have to say that I got this box from Andrea. It was not my house. I did not buy this product. It is
a teaching tool.
EnviroKids organic crispy rice gluten-free fruity burst bars.
Great. And how many sugar packets are in one serving?
2. 2 sugar packets in one bar.
Okay, now please read the ingredients of that bar.
Okay, in order. Organic brown rice flour, organic brown rice syrup, organic honey, organic fruity pieces. And in the fruity pieces are organic evaporated cane juice, organic rice syrup, organic coconut oil, citric acid, natural flavors, beet color, organic turmeric, organic soy lecithin, organic soy oil, organic invert cane syrup, organic evaporated cane juice, organic cornstarch, acacia gum, natural flavors, organic molasses, and organic rice bran extract.
That was a lot of sugars.
It's a lot of sugar. It's all sugar, and you're just so it's such a fooler because everything's organic. You know, it's, they have organic in front of everything, so you would think that, yeah, it's organic and it's gluten-free, and so.
Must be okay. So what I had in front of me was a Larabar, and it had 21 grams of sugars, which divides out to 5 little packets of sugar. And the ingredients in my Larabar are dates, almonds, and unsweetened cherries. So if I was just looking at the nutritional facts, and I was picking up a Larabar or a Enviro Crispy Bar, and I was thinking sugars are bad, I might pick the Enviro Bar because it has 2 sugars in it, and this one has 5. But these sugars are coming from dates, almonds, and unsweetened cherries. These sugars also have fat, fiber, and protein. This bar has fat, fiber, and protein in it. So that nutritional information is deceptive. We want to be eating whole foods. The nutritional information is not going to tell us if we're eating whole foods. The ingredients are. The ingredients don't lie. So this is what's really important here. What we're looking at is the difference between sugar and sugars. And what we're asking you to do is to start reading ingredients on all packaged foods you buy. And remember that the nutritional facts can be deceptive, but the ingredients can't lie. There are many key physiological results from eating sugar, mostly refined sugar, but also any food that converts easily to sugar without sitting behind the slow train. And again, that slow train is fat, fiber, and protein. And wrapping our heads around our kids' sugar intake is huge. So just thinking about this Larabar, for an instance, and just me saying it has fat, fiber, and protein in it, those sugars are going to react less quickly in the body, even though it has more sugars because of that fat, fiber, and protein, whereas the sugars in the bar that Andrea had are going to react more quickly in the body. I teach another class called Sweet Tooth, Bitter Truth, and in that class we talk about sugar's effects on mineral depletion, immune system repression, blood sugar and insulin response, brain function, including its inhibitory effects on serotonin production, inflammation, heart disease, and the teeth. And regulating one, several, or all of these areas that are brought into dysregulation by sugar could very well be the key to your child's equanimity. So I'm going to back up a little bit and talk about that just a tiny bit more. A lot of times kids have mineral deficiencies. Sugar depletes our stores of magnesium and calcium. So that can directly affect your child's health and just making sure that they get enough of those minerals, and there are better and worse ways to do that. Or your child could be fighting for their immune system, could be constantly at battle, doing work all the time, and that makes them more disruptive or agitated all the time. Their blood sugar could be going up and down, up and down, up and down, and that could be making them have more symptoms. Their brain function could be depleted, their serotonin. We need to nurture our children in all ways possible. So sugar definitely has an effect on all those bodies and systems that I'm talking about. And I've seen countless children and adults go through really rapid and extreme transformation in weight, in balance, and mental function with the elimination of refined sugar. And by that, I'm talking about the white stuff. And I also see people of varying ages go through withdrawal from removing sugar from their diet. And I know very well from watching people do it and from having done it myself that eliminating sugar is no easy task, and we're not asking you to remove sugar at this point. That is not your action step from this teaching point, unless you're already close to it. If you are on a spectrum of eating where sugar is not in your diet very often and it just sneaks in every so often, then you may be at a point to say, I'm ready, I'm done, we don't need to have that anymore. But if you're not, you don't need to go there yet. We will tell you your action step in just a minute. So I also just want to stress that we both love our treats, and we're in no way suggesting that your children should be deprived of them. We're both making treats all the time. And what we like to teach and practice with our children is the art, and it is an art, of being more selective and ideally more hands-on with the treats and sweets provided. Andrea, do you want to tell how you talk about just a little bit how you work around this with Isaac, not eating sugar?
Well, because I have been on basically a very low sugar diet since the early 90s from the candida thing, he's always had to work. He doesn't even know it because he just has never had it. But what we do is I use a lot of alternative sweeteners, and I make sure that he has treats where he doesn't feel like he's different or he doesn't feel like he's deprived. And for the most part, I think where we run into the most problems is like birthday parties, I would say. And if there's a birthday party where I just know that I don't really want him eating what they have, what I'll do is I will involve him in it, and I'll ask him, you know, do you want me to make you chocolate cupcakes? And I can make a really healthy chocolate cupcake, and I make 6 of them, and I bring them. Some other kids might have food allergies, and he's proud of it, and he doesn't feel left out at all. And actually, you can see that other children are interested in what he's eating, and they'll try it, and they sometimes end up liking it more than what's being served. So that's just a couple of the ways that I kind of work around the sugar thing with him.
Yeah, it's definitely doable. And like with Isaac, Gilbert hasn't eaten sugar in his life. So we know these kids are starting from a different place. But I see a lot of kids in my practice. And I've taught that Sweet Tooth class many, many times. So I see lots of people make these changes. And we removed sugar from our diet while I was pregnant because of sugar's effects on cancer growth. So it was taken out then. So Gilbert's really never had it, but he gets so many treats, he does not feel deprived. He's not left feeling like he can't have something. And in fact, when he does eat something that's made with refined sugar, he tends not to like it. One time I offered him a cupcake from a place that I knew they used better ingredients, and I said he could have it as a treat, and it was exciting to pick it out. And he brought it home, and he ate a bite, and he said, "Can I just have half of this?" And I said, "Sure." And we cut it in half, and then he said, "Can I just eat the bottom?" He didn't want the icing. And I said, "Sure." And then he said, "Is it okay if I throw this away?" And I was like, "Absolutely." He was worried about me spending the money and him ditching the cupcake, but it really wasn't of interest to him. And at Halloween, he has things that he does. There are totally ways to go through this. And certainly since the Your Vibrant Child program is leading up to Halloween, we will give lots of tips on how to navigate things like that. And the recipes that we sent you, the Dreamsicles, have been a big hit with all the kids that we know that have tried them. I've gotten emails about how great they are, even with the pickiest popsicle eaters. And I actually brought the piece of cake no-bake brownies to a dinner party on Friday night, and the kids were rolling their eyes back in their heads with pleasure upon taking their first bite. They were just in heaven eating those brownies. And when I told Andrea that, she giggled, and it was great. It's so gratifying to know that the kids love the treats. So it's not impossible. We promise.
These things, I mean, they're sweet. These things are really sweet, and I think for a child, they can't differentiate between refined sugar and something that's really, they like sweet. I know my son, he loves a sweet treat. So to him, it doesn't really matter, you know, and they can't tell. They really can't.
And it's definitely harder with the children when they're older, but they do get on board. They have to be on board with it. You can't go tell them that you're going to be making changes. They have to understand why and be on board. And, you know, there are definitely ways to do that, and we promise that we help people do this all the time. I also wanted to say that I'm working with an 8-year-old girl now who has leukemia, and again, we took the sugar out fast from her diet as soon as I started working with them because sugar feeds cancer growth. So we, and it does that because the cells in your body are growing at a rapid rate, and cancer cells are growing at a really rapid rate, so you don't need to feed them, and sugar is going to, that glucose is going to directly feed those cells. So we took the sugar out, and she's been getting lots of treats. I have a message board specifically for her team, and that team gets recipes all the time where they can be making her treats and making her good food besides treats. But her parents, one of her parents said to me recently that they felt the change. So this is a taste bud change, too. They not only felt the change in energy, but they felt that their taste buds had changed, that when they now ate something that they used to eat just 3 or 4 weeks ago, that it was too sweet for them. So this goes back to that point, like I'm saying, that the taste buds do change. So your action step from this teaching point, there's two parts. Number one is to start reading labels for ingredients, not nutritional information. And number two is to start making some simple sweets and treats with healthier sugar options. And you can start with those three that Andrea designed specifically for this class. So when we say healthier sugar options, what do we mean? Let's take a look at which sugars you're ideally looking to avoid when you look at your packaged foods. So I'm going to read through those, okay, Andrea?
Yeah, that's great.
I have a little list. So beet sugar, I want to just say about beet sugar that beet is one of the fastest growing GMO foods. So we don't want genetically modified foods. That's actually one of the things that's causing our children to have more allergies, that GMO is actually modifying some of their cellular makeup. So no GMO foods, and beet sugar is a big GMO crop now. Beets are, even though we think it's from beets, it's okay. Brown sugar, which is just sugar with molasses added back in, cane juice crystals, confectioner sugar, corn sweetener, corn syrup, evaporated cane juice, fruit juice concentrate, granulated sugar, high fructose corn syrup, of course, invert sugar, powdered sugar, raw sugar, sugar cane. So sugar cane, I mean everything that's not an actual organic sugar cane that you're picking from the field and sucking on. That's okay. It's a whole food. Turbinado sugar, white sugar, and there are more words that are used, I think like you heard Andrea say in her ingredient list, that are used for sugars. So more importantly, which sugars can you safely include and why? You want to give your list, Andrea, of sugars to include?
Sure. Raw honey, ideally local, which in Portland it's very easy to find local honey. Grade B organic maple syrup, coconut sugar, coconut palm sugar, which is something that I've been experimenting a lot with, and I really like it. It's a very low glycemic sugar, and I just, on my blog, put a new post up for a cookie made with that. Brown rice syrup, stevia, clear raw agave, and fruit and dried fruits. Dates make a really good sweetener. That's what I used for the brownies that Andrea was talking about. And when we talk about agave, we are talking about the clear, raw agave, and there's a lot of controversy surrounding agave right now. And I use it very sparingly, and if I do use it, I like to know exactly where the source is and where I get it from. And I have a relationship with somebody that makes it. And so that would be my advice, so to just be careful about where it's coming from.
Yeah, the agave, there's a lot of controversy that we won't go into here, but we are very conscious and conscientious about that, and we both use it really sparingly. So all of those sweeteners get our stamp of approval for kids for different reasons, and some are just plain whole foods and therefore have some great minerals and nutrients like the dates and the honey and the maple syrup, and some are lower glycemic, like Andrea mentioned, like the coconut sugar and the brown rice syrup, the agave if it's from a good source, and stevia, which you have to really learn how to work with. And they all have different uses, and they're all a good place to start experimenting in the kitchen. And like I said, we're all at different levels of this. So many of you may already be incorporating these practices, and some of you may be newer to it. So Do you want to toggle over and see if we have any questions, Andrea?
Yeah, you've actually answered most, except for, let's see. There is, I've always provided good, nutritious food. Do you want me to read it?
Sure.
Okay. I've always provided good, nutritious food for my kids, but all they see from their friends is constant snacking on junk. Minimal sit-down meals because they snacked on junk all day and poor nutrition. How do I get across to them that just because that is what the majority of society does, that's not what we want for ourselves?
Okay, that's a great question. So how do you have any ideas about that, Andrea? Do you want to jump in with any thoughts?
I have to read that over again.
Well, this is kind of what we live. You know, we live at this level where we're constantly teaching our children that the way that other children eat may not be the way that we eat. I think it's almost like it's religion's too strong of a word, but it's just like a child who's a vegetarian or a child who has celiac and can't eat wheat. There's a certain way in which we just kind of work with our children as part of our, you know, this is our family, this is our belief system, this is what we do, and this is why we think it's important. And they pretty easily adopt it as their own. So I find that it's a great question, and we're all at different levels in this, and it's just part of that navigating through education. Do you have any other thoughts on that, Andrea?
I think at least in my household, I explain in detail why we eat the way we eat, and I really break it down for Isaac, and I tell him, and he gets it, and he understands, and he likes the facts, and he respects that. So I'm not sure that would work in every household. It does work in mine.
Yeah, I think slowly but surely it does. And again, easier when they're younger to make shifts and changes. But the older kids want to know the information, and that's something really cool about the classes that we'll be teaching in the Your Vibrant Child series, is that those actual lectures are something that an older child could listen to also, to understand the why behind some of these things. And I want to say here that sugar is such an important and challenging topic, especially navigating it with kids and especially navigating it out there in the world and outside of the home, that it's actually our leading topic in the Your Vibrant Child program. And we'll be teaching how to make the necessary shifts to actually remove it from your family's diet and how to navigate that removal at school, at camp, at restaurants, birthday parties, play dates, and camping trips. And like I said, we've done it for our families, and we teach many more families how to do the same. And we've also made sure that in our program we're giving action steps for different levels. So just like that listener was asking, you know, something of, this is, I already do this for my family, how do I navigate it? So, for instance, you may be like that listener with the question that Andrea read and feel ready to both understand the reasoning and the how-to of the dietary changes further. And a big part of making changes for our children and ultimately our entire family is knowing how to make it work outside there in the world. And we'll take you through those steps in a really exciting and empowering way. And I really wish someone had done this for me. When I made these changes, I had no support and had to do the work from the ground up. And, Andrea, I think you, when we've talked about this in the past, you've said that was true for you too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we just even said earlier, you know, we really had to learn by the seat of our pants. And we also both tap into a lot of different programs online and in person where we're trying to learn more information or see what kind of teaching that other people are doing. And I find that even though they teach me some information, they don't necessarily teach me the practical way to make those changes or incorporate those things or provide any support in doing it. So one of the reasons I have such a high success rate in my practice is because I don't just give recommendations like remove sugar from your kid's diet and then send parents on their way. I actually give the understanding, the tools, and the resources to do it. And this is why a lot of doctors and naturopaths here in town are sending their patients to me, because it's not that they don't know to do these things, but they don't have the time in their practice to teach people how. And so that's why how I'm able to allow them to take their work a step further and allow families to get the best out of making dietary changes and get the best out of what their doctors and health professionals can provide for them. So again, that Your Vibrant Child page is now in your inbox, and if you want to sign up for the program, it's right there. You can start doing it. It takes you through several steps in order to actually sign up and register, and it starts in just 2 weeks, and we're really confident that together we'll bring you the information, tools, and support that will give you the results you're longing for, both the bolstering that your kids need to thrive and live their lives with intention and equanimity, and the understanding that you need to know you're offering your kids the best nutrition they deserve. So we're going to keep looking to see if there are any more questions. So if you have any, please type them in that box there. But we also have some really other exciting news to share. I feel like we're telling everybody we're having a baby, which we kind of are. So besides the launch of the Your Vibrant Child program tonight, we're also unveiling our new joint business. Woohoo! And that's called Truly Food. So while Andrea will still have her business, Phyto Foods, which is phytofoodspdx.com, and you can go there and get that amazing chocolate cookie recipe that she was talking about. And I'll still have Replenish PDX, and if you're not signed up for Replenish PDX, you can go to www.replenishpdx.com. I send out a monthly recipe mail. Together, besides those separate companies, we form Truly Food. And all your emails having to do with our joint ventures will now come from Truly Food, which will soon be trulyfood.com. We don't actually have that finalized yet. And Truly Food is two real moms. It's us offering you real information about real food. And we're aiming to introduce free video blogs, downloadable ebooks, and amazing class and community experiences like we're launching with this Your Vibrant Child program. And our mission with Truly Food is to address the issues, questions, and concerns that we see parents and children go through. And we've taken the common distresses that we hear and see in our practices, and we'll develop an ever-widening pool of resources for you to draw upon to feel more confident in the ways in which you are using food, nutrition, and recipes to nourish and nurture your family. So stay tuned. We have lots of really great ideas. We can barely keep up with all our ideas. And the teleseminars are one way to get the information we repeat over and over again out to as many parents as possible. We're really all about creating a revolution of change through nutrition. And we really want to create this opportunity for long-term success, change, and transformation for you and your family and your children. And we offer a real paradigm shift in your relationship to food. So that's something that I really see happen with our work, is that people come away with a whole different perspective on how to eat. And as with our separate businesses, this is true in our separate businesses, neither one of us are connected or affiliated or even believers in one particular dietary theory. We distill the best of the best and consider different approaches based on the health of the individual. And we welcome you to join the Truly Food Revolution, which more than anything is about you, your children, and real food. So that whole thing about dietary philosophies, you know, like we said earlier, it's really a matter of an individual need, and that bio-individuality is really important. Two people could manifest the same symptoms, and it can be a completely different core imbalance. But there are certain things that we can all do to figure out or to get closer to what those core imbalances are. So I'm going to hop on over to the question page, see if there's anything going on there.
There's a number of questions, and I think what we'll do is answer a couple and then send them out in an email, do you think?
Okay.
Andrea? I'll read one. It's, the yogurt I'm looking at has 25 grams of sugar. Nancy's low fat. It has milk and non-fat dry milk, strawberries, honey, and bacteria. Is there a better yogurt to use?
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, yeah.
So my answer to that is that low-fat dairy your sugars increase when you take the fat out. So you take the fat out, you're more on the fast train, and those sugars can be glucose, they can be lactose. So in this case, it's lactose. So those sugars are actually increased in that food. So my recommendation for yogurt is to buy plain, full-fat, organic yogurt. And the brand that I like to recommend is Strauss's. Do you have a brand that you like, Andrea?
Anything that's full fat and organic to me.
Yeah, Strauss's, I know more about their practices with their cows, so that's one that I recommend. And then what you can do with that is mix in either some raw honey, ideally local raw honey, to add some sweetener to it that has some good nutrients in it, or you can get one of the fruit sweetened jams, or it's berry season, just mash up a bunch of berries, and you can even add a tiny bit of sweetener to that. This is a good place to use the stevia drops if you want a tiny more sweetener, if you kind of slowly cook down some berries and then add a tiny bit of stevia to that. You can add that to the yogurt for kids. But the raw honey usually works as a good transformation to the whole full-fat plain yogurt. So, you know, that honey isn't raw honey. It's processed. That makes it more sugary because it doesn't have those nutrients that you have in the raw honey. The strawberries, we don't know what source they come from. I don't know if it says it's organic, and strawberries are one of the environmental working group's top, what is that list called? The Dirty Dozen. It's one of their Dirty Dozen. We don't want to eat strawberries that aren't organic. Anything that has its skin exposed to the pesticides is something we don't want to offer our children in a non-organic form. So, you know, the better choice is to go with the full-fat, organic, plain yogurts. Do you have anything to add?
Nope. I do the exact. That's what I do for my child.
Yeah.
Full-fat yogurt with honey and a little bit of fruit. I just cut up fruit and honey. And that's it.
So there was a question, can you mention some of the sweeteners we should use? We'll put that in the email. We listed it, but it might be good to have it in writing so you'll have that. Any other questions you see, Andrea, that you want to?
I think the rest would be good in an email. There's one about you said to add fat into meals. Do you have a range of recommended fat grams for the day?
You know, it's funny. A lot of people ask me about these gram measurements and or like how many grams should a woman have, how many grams should a man have. And the way I teach people is to tune into their bodies. If we're eating what our body needs, we're not going to exceed the number of calories or grams that we need. But it's a process. It's a long process. But I think those things aren't in keeping with the bioindividuality that we're talking about. So it's like to say a child should have this many grams or an adult should have this many grams. Everybody has really different needs, and the children's needs for fat are immense. They really need a lot of fat. Both of our children are skinny as sticks, and they eat. We're putting fat in everything all the time. So I don't ever think about it in terms of grams. I tend not to be that kind of nutritionist. But, you know, it's a process of getting out of that kind of thinking. It's definitely a question that comes up a lot, and it's a good one. And I'll think of some better ways to help transform that thinking that we can share with you in the Q&A that we'll send out. So we're coming to an end here of our time, and it's been fun to share all this information with you guys, and I hope it's been helpful. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll become part of the Your Vibrant Child community of parents who want to nourish their children with truly food nutrition. And please, we'll be sending out another newsletter. This one just went to you guys who signed up for this call, so you could have that first opportunity to be that first 20 and to get that discount. But in a couple days, we're going to send it out to both of our mailing lists, to a bunch of doctors we know. There's going to be a lot bigger mailing. So jump onto that community sooner rather than later. And in the upcoming newsletters that you'll get from us, there will be a link so that you can actually share this information with any other parents that you know that you think would benefit from being part of this program, because it is really affordable. One of the questions that's on the forum is if I offer long-distance nutritional counseling, and I do. I work with people all over the country, and this is another way to work with people all over the country in a community forum, and that's what I'm trying to do more of as well, in addition to my private practice of working with people in Portland and all around. And to be clear, again, this is an investment in the health and well-being of your entire family if you become part of this Your Vibrant Child community. And we've created an experience for you that's inspiring, informative, and completely supported. And you'll be amazed that life can actually be easier in your home by changing your family's relationship to food in slow but steady ways. So we're hoping you'll join us in that program, and we're really excited about it, and this was a thrill to bring this information to you tonight. Do you have anything to say in signing off, Andrea?
No, just thanks a lot, you guys, for calling in. And if you have any questions that you want answered in a follow-up email, feel free to put them up, and we'll send that out in the next couple of days to get all of your questions answered.
Yeah, we even kept to our time on the dot. How about that?
All right.
We're good. Okay. Bye, you guys. Thank
Bye.
You.
The moderator has left the conference.